Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Rouse. It's Sunday the 5th of January. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
So here we are, new year 2025. How quickly did that come round? And it's just, as I get older, I think, as you say, don't they, that literally time flies, but it feels like days, even days now are going. There's not enough hours in the day, guys. There's not enough hours. What can we do in 2025 to slow time down and just have more reflection?
You have to go and sit on the beach, mate, because it's longer on the beach. The day lasts longer. You watch the sun go down and the sea is lapping at your feet, and it just.
But if you read a good book, you can burn 3 hours. It feels like you've read a few chapters, and then you realise your whole morning's gone.
But it's not your whole morning's gone. Your whole morning you enjoyed. It's how you view what you did. No.
I don't know. I think it's Christmas, right? And so you just sort of, you see family members that maybe you haven't seen for a couple of years, and like cousins and nephews and nieces are all older. And then you look at your own children. My eldest is 11 now, and he's 11, you know, 7 years from now, he's off doing his own thing. Time goes too quickly. And I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. We slow it down.
Yeah, no, this is a good point about our kids, because that period between sort of the finished weaning and all those things when they're sort of 4 years old, 5 years old, and they start to become independent human beings. That period of time, all the way to 18, and then they either leave. They don't necessarily leave, but
you can't 14 now, can they?
Yeah, they that 14 years, I think, boom, flies. I mean, you've got 18-year-olds now.
Not for them.
No, for us, I mean, yeah, for us.
Because you remember your school days, primary school felt like an absolute age to get through those 6 or 7 years. Secondary school went a bit quicker, but still felt like an absolute drag. But as a parent, as you say, Kev, got an 18-year-old now, you know, she celebrated her 18th birthday, you know, it's mad. And that just feels...
You still feel 18, don't you, Phil?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just about years, right? Because when you're 5, a year is a fifth of your life. And when you're 50, you know, it's 10 times less. It's just time goes faster the older you get. But I think, you know, the good news is that our generation now, the older guys, the guys in the 30s, 40s, 50s, I think, you know, we have a good chance of living a good old long life. Let's hope we see New Year's, you know.
Well, what is your New Year's resolution then? Do you have a New Year's resolution?
My New Year's resolution is to get back in physical shape, because I injured my knee back in late February last year. And then I can do anything apart from swimming, which I hate, until about late November. And I've now got the all clear to go running and do exercise, like proper exercise again. And I'm quite excited to actually get back in shape, because it's been a miserable sort of, in terms of sort of, I'm someone who's always been really active, and the past 9 months, 10 months has just been awful for me in terms of sat in the chair and not being able to do stuff. So my
analysis, I hurt my shoulder last January when I fell down a hole.
You fell down what?
I fell down a hole. I fell down a hole and I hurt my shoulder, and I don't think it's ever fully recovered. I had physio on it.
I was just running along the river, right? Like I had the same place I've done for the past 18 years. And then my knee just went crack, right? In the middle, effectively, of nowhere. And I had to sort of limp to the nearest, like, road, call the taxi, drove me home. They're like, yeah, it's just fucked. And that's effectively what the doctor said. You're like, you'll be fine. You just can't do anything for a very long time unless you want it to never be unfucked again. And that was pretty much the long and short.
So my New Year's resolution, which sounds like it's exactly the same as you, is I want to be in a better physical state than I am currently. And I probably am in a slightly better physical state than I was this time last year, but not very much. So I would like that to be dramatic.
Don't do resolutions, man. You know, that if you look at the success rate, only 75 to 80% of people only keep the resolution for the first week of January, man. So, you know, if you, basically, it's a change of...
Well, it sounds, It sounds like if we started on Christmas, we'd be done with it by New Year's Day.
By the time this podcast goes out 5 days in, you guys are already going to be eating pies and you've fallen off the wagon, as they say.
No, I'm not telling myself I'm not eating pies. Don't go over the top.
You're not going to get in the best physical shape if you're eating pies, Kev. Come on.
Yeah, well, we don't really have pies here, and you only get pies when I come to the UK.
I'm down here in Exeter, and if we're going back to my uni days, I used to do rowing, and obviously there's pubs, you know, along the river. And we just row to the next pub, drinking a couple of pints.
Not a pub crawl, but a pub row.
A pub row, yeah. Probably quite dangerous by the time we got back, but you'd have sort of our coach would be like cycling along really slowly, but also he'd be drinking. And occasionally you'd be wondering, is he going to fall into the river? But no, we all survived. It was all right. But no, back to the...
Okay, so today's podcast is going to be a ramble about lots of stocks that we think have got a chance in 2025. So I'm going to kick off with a trio, and I think you're going to add another one to it as well, Charles, which is Galileo Resources, African Pioneer, and Extract Resources. All have licenses in Northwest Zambia. Got to be some exciting stuff happens this coming year. We were expecting it this year. Hasn't happened. We need the rain in Zambia, obviously, as well. But, yeah, give us your thoughts, Phil and Charles.
I think with Arc Minerals and Tertiary and various others, you know, like it's these companies, you're drilling in these places in Northwest Zambia. Somebody's going to find another load, right? And the problem is with the rain, the less it rains, the more we can keep drilling. Fantastic. But I think with all of them, it's just a case of we've now got to this point in Zambia where all the majors are coming back to the country. They're all desperate to get decent licenses. You know, ARC obviously already has this massive joint venture with Anglo American, but African Pioneer, you know, with FQM. But I suspect that we're going to, Ivanhoe is obviously coming back to the country and they've not talked very much about what they're doing. Wouldn't surprise me to see them get involved with some of these smaller companies that already have locked down some of the best licenses. And we're going to have this situation, you already have it now, where we need the majors to fund the exploration properly. And I think we're going to get that in a mass scale in the country. I think that's going to be the story of 2025 in Zambia. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I think obviously we alluded to on the past podcast that Zambia, as you've said, has been fraught with issues related to power. Obviously, with the drought situation, not seeing any rain at all really in 2024. There's a lot of the companies shoring up the solar power as well. If we can get the rainy season, you know, coming and the rains to create the hydropower, then there'll be more investment in the country itself. I think you've got the likes of, Friedland saying he's going to go into Zambia as well, which looks very promising. Yeah, I think that unfortunately some of these companies are a little bit at the mercy of some of the joint venture partners in terms of getting things moving. And that's always a difficult bit of a position to put yourself into. But I'd like to see more progress in 2025 for some of these, this reporting from, the aforementioned companies, really. I think it's been a slow year, 24, really.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously you're always going to have power imbalances, right? But I think it's not quite as imbalanced as it used to be, because at the end of the day, the best licenses in Zambia are all gone. They've been taken up years ago. And the copper supply gap is there. And the majors have now done all the mergers and acquisitions, you know, BHP and Oz, Newmont and Newcrest, Allkem, Levent, and you know, all the others. And yet it's all just shuffling decks from Titanic. You're not creating more copper deposits by doing mergers and acquisitions. And so they're going to have to spend more on exploration, go back to that sort of what used to be spent in the 1980s, 1990s. And where they're going to spend it is going to be in places where the copper is going to be found. And we know that Northwest Zambia is where, by all geological facts, by everything that we know, there's copper to be found out there, way, way more than's already been discovered. You know, Colin Bird has alluded to this, Nifedark has said it as well, that everybody knows somebody will find it, and then the next one that gets found will spark the next exploration rush. And I just hope it's one of the ones in our portfolio list.
And they've got, I think, those three companies that Kev mentioned, you know, Galileo, Extract, and African Pioneer have got extremely good real estate. You know, they're really positioned well in between the Angola and up to the Congo. I think that they are prime real estate.
Yeah, prime, all prime real estate, yeah. I mean, that's what I say. I mean, there are licenses available, they're just not as good, you know.
So what about the copper itself? Okay, we got these licenses, but what about the copper itself? 2024 did not go as I anticipated. I really thought copper was going to do a bit of a what gold did this year, up 30 odd percent. Copper is not up 30 odd percent. That's probably flat on the year, even though at one point it was up maybe 25%.
Well, copper, it's interesting because copper and iron ore have always historically been tied together because effectively they're both base metals, which do well when the economy, global economy is booming and don't do well when it's not. That's changing now because the amount of iron ore, Simandou, the iron ore coming out of Guinea, but also the excess iron ore coming out of Australia, the VSO, the plants coming up there, means that you just have a differentiated model from what you have in the past. And you have a situation where a copper is still being seen as a metal that should be based on, is there going to be a global recession in 2025 slash 2026, or at least a little bit of a pullback? Potentially, there's massive geopolitical risk. Economies all over the world, the developed world, are struggling. Will there be less demand for copper from China? Possibly. But it's all quite short-termist. When you're talking about sort of the next 4, 5, 6 years, when that supply gap comes, because everybody in the developing world wants to get a fridge, for example, or electric vehicles properly take off, which they are in China now massively taking off, you'll then see copper is going to rise and rise and rise. And if you think like a major, the majors are looking at the next cycle and they're saying, well, copper is still relatively cheap. The mines are still relatively cheap. We need to go hunt down the new mines now. Because, I mean, we were talking about it in the last podcast. We were talking about development timelines. And Donald Trump in America, for example, is trying to shorten the development timelines. But even if you find a decent sized tier one copper deposit in Northwest Zambia today, it'll still be years and years before you're in production. Even with the best of intentions, maybe just under a decade if you're lucky. So I think copper is, I don't know how it's going to do in the next year or two. But in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to rocket. It just will. That's my view.
Yeah, and one to look out for, in my view, in the first 6 months of the year is Eastar Resources. Got their grant and looking for porphyries in Kazakhstan with BHP Explore. But I think the more interesting thing is the drilling they're doing now on Vukuba. It's VMS style copper. And I think potentially that's got the opportunity to be worth many multiples of the current market cap. They've had problems this last year or two by raising money very, very cheaply when they had opportunities to do it at other times. Has its risks, but I really do think it's got a great chance of doing many multiples of its current market cap. What do you think, Charles?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones where it could do pretty well, I'd say, from the market cap that it has. Again, we've had, most of these stocks just been beaten down. If you look at any junior resource company in the exploration stage over the past 2 or 3 years, all of them have suffered, pretty much universally, regardless of how, what their results have been or what their corporate progress is like. But I think that they've got a decent chance, and they should have a reasonable 2025. And again, I think it's the same with all of these. It's about money, right? It's about making sure that they're well capitalized for what they're doing. And I think they're okay at the moment.
Yeah, no, they raised to put the money in the ground in
Yeah,
Vukuba. So
exactly.
I think they're okay for the whole of 2025. I don't think they're going to need to raise.
And BHP Explore grants, they don't just hand them out, right? This is the thing. So BHP are involved. Yes, it's only to the tune of $500,000. It's not particularly much money in the grand scheme of things, but you have a major right there watching with interest. And that has to be worth something more than the actual money they've injected as well.
Indeed. Let's move to one that both me and Phil were very keen on this time last year and has had an annus horribilis, if that's what the Queen used to call it. And that is Teck Minerals. What's your thoughts on Teck Minerals, Phil?
Well, obviously we kind of saw them, we saw them come back to market, didn't we? Or unsuspend is probably the better way of putting it. That was on the, I think it was on the 20, 1st or 20th of December or something like that. And obviously they announced, also announced on the back of that, a black mass offtake agreement, didn't he, with Glencore, you know, obviously one of the world's largest globally diversified natural resource companies. And obviously under that agreement, the recyclers will sell the black mass, which is obviously produced at its this the facility in Wolverhampton that we visited, to Glencore's European network and operations. And that black mass sale begins with a 100-ton trial, and after that, obviously, they'll discuss commercial terms, when that's announced. So, yeah, exciting. I mean, I think when they came back to market on that day, on the 17th, the stock moved some 300%. It was like 0.1 in the morning, and I think by the afternoon, it was trading around 0.5 pence, if I remember correctly, or 0.15 to say 0.5. So it was about 350% up from the previous, obviously, before it suspended. And yeah, it looks exciting. I don't know what the future holds for the company going forward. Obviously, it's very encouraging that they've got this offtake in place with Glencore. I'd like to see more announcements in that space, because I feel like it's been plagued with delays. Obviously, Atlas on being on board, there's been a lot of dilution there. Obviously, we saw some pretty significant sells around that 17th, 18th of December. I think there was a 65 million share sell, which was something like, I don't know, it was like £250,000 was
sold. Must have been one hell of a short squeeze that day.
Yeah, I think there was a short squeeze, as you say, but ultimately it finished. I mean, it's trading around like 0.175 around, around the end of the, certainly was at the end of the year's trading. So it dropped back. It lost some of those significant gains. But yeah, I think it's one of those companies. It feels like it's a bit of a flip of a coin, really.
No, I think it's I've not covered Teck Minerals in any real depth, but I did say I had bought some shares before the suspension, and that was a lovely trade in terms of a short-term trade. I hope others managed to get in on it. But in terms of fundamentally, I mean, you've got Chango Tokmanni. It's a strategic advisor, also a strategic advisor for Guardian Metal. And Chang does seem to get stuff done kind of behind the scenes. And so you might find that things change, overnight. And if nothing else, kind of proven that when it runs, it really can run this stock. Now, the thing is with it, obviously, in terms of strategic positioning, the strategic positioning is fantastic. You've got this Labour government that's just hell-bent on throwing money at anything in this space, which is helpful as well. But you still have, even after the share price fall in critical metals, the Nasdaq-listed company, you're still looking at $8.9 million in shares for those Irish assets are going to come into TechOne, and they're only locked in until the end of February, right? And so you're going to have to pay off $2.2 million to GBML and all the other creditors, but you're still going to leave you with $7.7 million to come in relatively soon, so you can pay off the what is effectively debt spiral financing, and then you could get cracking in 2025. Has it been a bad call for last, 2024? Yes. Could it rise really, really quickly in 2025? Also, yes. I think the risk that you, maybe risk isn't the right word, but I think the reality is that you have a lot of shareholders who, if it does get back to their, buying their, I'm trying to think, if they get back in the green, if they get back in black, then you then might have selling pressure. But I do think that they do, they've got capital coming in, easily available liquid capital, relatively soon, and they're well positioned. And Glencore has just signed it off to, okay, we don't know the scale of it, but you've got a major announced signing up to it. So a lot of fucking about, forgive the French, but the opportunity down here for people who have a risk appetite could be quite good.
Yeah, I think if you look at it from today's price, if you're not already invested, then it is a real risk reward play, I think. The issue is obviously a lot of people are already well invested. The scenario is that there is going to be quite a lot more dilution, I think, whether we like it or not. And that's obviously going to not help current shareholders. But I see it's got a fighting chance now. It's obviously had all sorts of problems in 2024, one of them being that really just didn't get enough batteries through the gate to actually produce enough income to run itself. But I think that's slowly but surely changing. So let's hope. And I'm moving on now, changing directions a bit, but what's people's thoughts on Celadon? That was obviously another one of our picks last year. Did very badly at the end of last year because of really cash flow problems, not the actual product or what it's trying to do, or even it was its financial security that really affected it. So I think it's another, for me anyway, it's not that far off Teck Minerals in terms of it's a real risk reward play that if they get it right, if these revenues start coming in from Denmark and the other revenues start coming in the UK from what they're producing at the minute, then this could be a real turnaround very, very quickly.
I think it's one of those ones. I mean, the last RNS from just before Christmas. I mean, they were saying as long as they get the last bits of capital that they are due from creditors, then they have enough to sort of March, the end of Q1 next year. And so, what they really need is they need somebody to come on board and an institutional investor. I haven't been out to sell it on facilities. I've invited last year. I started last year. Phil, I think you've been actually. So you might be able to comment.
Yeah, I
On
was
that.
up there in sort of August, end of August,
But
September.
the actual facilities themselves, that what they're actually able to do, what they have, is promising, right? Like it's something that it's a company that should be able to grow. And so the challenge for CEO James Short is he effectively has a 3 month window between now and the end of March, or really maybe more like 2 months, to get investment into the company. That's what he needs to do. Whether he can do it, I don't know. I don't know, James. But I think that's the answer. You need somebody to come on board with a few million.
100%. It's a funding thing because when you
Yeah.
look at the phase one, the phase two, and phase three, like phase one's completed, phase two's very sort of, whatever percent completed, but it's well underway.
Yeah.
Phase three is obviously future, but like they've got the ability to produce into, basically they can sell the product. They've got them. There's enough demand for the product, but it's about getting increasing their output.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
And that's the frustrating part because the what they have there at the facility is Kev'll attest to
still,
this, is
yeah.
unbelievable. It's groundbreaking. The technology, this is not just, cannabis or medical cannabis growing. This is a pharma company, and that's the reality. Like when you look at the trials that they've done with all,
Well,
they've got running with the NHS and that vaporizer product that I've seen, it's phenomenal. And what it can do for things like, for women's conditions, for health conditions, for autism, for endometriosis, like genuinely, it is a game changer. But I think it's just down to funding, purely and simple
yeah,
funding.
I would imagine James is on the phone every day trying to get people on board. But it's the same as this AI bubble stuff, right? Like I was saying, we need that bubble to pop. We need capital to come back to the small cap market so that people are prepared to invest in these things down here where there's value and growth. Fingers crossed, I guess it would be my one on that one. I think here the funding problem, get the funding. And I think if they do get the funding, then it should shoot up very quickly because everyone can see it is just a capital, a cash flow issue. It is not a this company doesn't work at you. It's we need money while we're
Yeah,
growing.
absolutely. So while we're on that same subject then of companies that could turn around, let's go to what was our superstar until 2 or 3 months before the end of the year, were Encantera.
Encantera. Vil, do you want to lead on this one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they announced news just before, was it just before Christmas? Okay, you think, and
Yeah.
again, it's down to the timings, isn't it? You lose contact, but basically, they put out an update at the end of November, I think it was, that they had received unsupported allegations from a third party concerning a potential patent infringement, obviously in relation to the formulation of the Skin Plus Cell range products. The company considers the unsupported allegations to be without merit, and obviously the company is in those communications with the third party in order to resolve this matter expediently. No formal proceedings have yet been issued, but the company is prepared to issue related proceedings in the event a resolution cannot be achieved. So, shocker, really, just devastating news. Obviously, that crippled his share price. It was trading around probably around the sort of 15, 16 pence when that news came out. It dropped off to, I think it was trading around 2, 2.5p at the day, and then it's bounced back up to the 5.25p. I've finished the year around the 5p mark, so it has recovered somewhat. But yeah, I mean, it's devastating for the company. If you're running a company and then all of a sudden, you're about to roll out the product. Obviously, it was already, you alluded to this before, that it had already suffered delays on the whole rollout in Marionnaud. In fact, I was in Paris just before Christmas and I saw the Marionnaud shops in the streets. And I was like, that's a real sucker punch because this product should have been in those stores, not necessarily in Paris, but certainly in Switzerland where it was going to be rolled out. So, yeah, fraught with issues, that one. But I just hope that they can get back on track, sort out these legal wranglings and you know.
Put it behind them. I think the problem is, right, I mean, if you look at all, you know, popular new, I call them new tech stocks, where they've sort of created a new product in the market. And you've got Tech Capital or Microsoft with its, you know, Salty Crisps, or its, I don't know, Ondo Incitec and good one with the LeapBot, or Optibiotics with the sugar replacers. And the thing is that you can, if you're at an early stage and you're rolling out, somebody can come along and say, oh, your patent is wrong. You've infringed on our patent. And the problem that you have as an investor is that either this Incantera has infringed on a previous patent, or it hasn't. It hasn't, or it has. And if it has, there's a massive issue. And if it hasn't, you know, the incentive for a bad actor to come along and just to drive down the share price is just there, isn't it? So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that from sort of a regulatory standpoint, from a legal standpoint? From my perspective, it's a legal case. You can't comment on that aspect of it. But I would say it seems to have been launched, this legal action, at a time where it would do the absolute maximum damage. Right? This is a publicly traded company on Aquis. Whoever had a problem with the potential patent infringement would have known about this months ago, months and months ago. And it's only now they've decided to launch it, which suggests to me that it's just malicious. But obviously the problem is you can't know until the case plays out, and therefore you just have to wait and see.
Yeah. And if it is malicious, then, you know, and it all effectively rolls into what we anticipated, then you could be picking up one hell of a bargain, but you're actually taking that risk. So another stock moving on would be Energy Pathways. Had an interesting 2024, launched just the very, very end of 23, and bombed pretty much for 6 months. And then they got some funding, a £5 million funding package. And then obviously everybody believed that this project can now take place. So it went from sort of 1.5p all the way up to 12 or 13p, I think. Its height was just after the budget, actually, I think, when the budget was announcing all these wonderful things for green technology and hydrogen storage and the electricity. So how do you think EPP could go forward in 2025, guys?
I mean, I'll lead on this one. I think when you sign a financing deal like they have, you effectively create a situation where you have to meet deadlines. And if you do, you'll be fine. And if you don't, you'll run into problems. But they're just, you know, this is the thing. It's if you have a Labour government which is hell-bent on spending billions and billions of pounds of various, you know, at this kind of stuff, then they're just well positioned. It's as simple as that. It's the same with the M1. They're well positioned. They've now got money. And the question is, can they execute? You know, I don't know the management there. I think you guys do, actually. But this is now an execution question. Do you have the management capability to make this happen? You've got the money, you've got the positioning, and now it's management and it's all on them. And I can't comment on that, I guess. But I would say,
yeah, no, my view is that I think Ben Kluve has years and years, decades and decades of experience in this, and I expect him to execute.
Yeah.
And then if they added some big names.
If he has, I think they're going to make money.
Yeah, so probably 2025, 2026. I think the announcement for the pre-feasibility is towards the end of the year, and then a final investment decision then would be at a similar time. So yeah, I think it's got potential to do very well. I think it's quite tightly held as a stock as well.
It's got a good big retail following now. There's really good, but because of, obviously, one of the main reasons is because of the movement in share price. You often see that, you know, it gathers momentum, and then you've got, I mean, the EPP Telegram group is very active. There's a lot of posts on there. They've put some great people in places there in terms of additional, you know, on the board for the hydrogen side of things. They've obviously now got this Wood Group UK Limited, this strategic partnership with Wood, who are a tier one consultancy and engineering company. And obviously they're going to move that forward, this pre-feed activities, which are targeted for the start of, you know, perfect timing, January 2025. And they're going to move into feed and engineering, you know, procurement, installation, commissioning and management phases of the mesh project, if the part is determined, you know, necessary. So, yeah, I think it looks very exciting with all the different things that are being put into place with all these strategic partnerships.
Yeah, and I think in terms of, you were talking about it, tightly held, I mean, it was 4p this time last year, December 2023. It was 1.5p at the start of October 2024. So if you've held through that fall, it tends to suggest you've got the strength to hold now that it's risen. And you've seen that, even though there's been volatility, it's actually relatively flat for the past 7 months or so. So you have a strong shareholding base, and hopefully it will pay off. I mean, it's definitely one to watch for next year.
There were a lot of key sort of, I think it was at Dial Square before this, a lot of those investors who were heavily invested in this as well, who supported it from the inception. So yeah, a lot of those core holders are still holding in.
I also think it's become a bigger deal as well now because of the hydrogen storage. When it first came, it was gas extraction, and yes, we might use the storage facility, but now it has become a storage play. The government definitely needs, as we talked about when last week, I think it was, when I was talking about MAST, the fact that, you know, when the wind blows a lot, it produces way more energy than we need, and all of that energy is lost. This needs to be converted into hydrogen and then stored and then used for something else. So I think that play in itself is a bigger thing. And while I'm on hydrogen, we then also Hydrogen Future Industries is one of the ones that we were following at the start of the year. It's had very poor return in 2024, but I really think there's got to be some progress in this. This is basically producing hydrogen on different areas and different sites, things like mining sites, so that they can use the wind to turn water into hydrogen so that they can use it for vehicles, use it for production. So in other words, you could start to mine in very far-flung places that don't have the energy there on site. It's an Aquaspace company. It's worth only $1.5 million or whatever, but I think it's one to keep an eye on because I think during 2025, we're going to see some news on it and we'll see what happens. Do you know anything about that one, Charles?
Honestly, no.
What's your thoughts, Phil, on that one?
Interesting technologies. I mean, they were unfortunately plagued with an issue related to their wind turbine prototype, which is in Montana in the USA. And obviously there was some sort of fault with the control unit, which I think required upgrading. So there's been, I know Tim Blake, the CEO we've had on in the past, he actually, you know, went to an extended site visit to Whitehall. And I think they reviewed the test facilities and also he took delivery of this liters of this wastewater, which is obviously from the mine, to do sort of analysis on the, you know, the quality or the appropriate separation cleaning process for this electrolysis feedstock that they're going to use. And the technology looks fascinating. It's all about whether or not they can prove up the technology. As you mentioned, there's this sort of wind turbine that spins. Obviously, the wind turns the turbine, which generates the the hydrogen. It generates electricity, energy on site, which, as we know, water is very much an integral part of, you know, so it's a big issue, isn't it, for mining companies. So if they can generate hydrogen, electricity and electrolysis, and then generate water as well at the same time from wind, then it's an absolute game changer for mining sites. Great tech, but it needs to be proven.
So what's one or two moonshots, as I've heard you call them, Charles, that you think, you know, if XYZ happens 2025, 26, 27, this thing could go stratospheric?
Moonshots. Moonshot. The thing is, when we talk moonshots, we're hoping sort of like 100 times return, which is, you know, seems a little bit greedy. And I think when we're looking at kind of the moonshotty kind of companies, and you're looking at ones which have like a potential global reach, they have a new technology, they can do really, really well. And so, you know, Ondo and Sasek, I think with LeakBot, I think that is going to become a global technology that's in every developed home in the world, because it solves a water leakage problem that we just has never been sold before, and it just works, and it's patented. And Craig, who runs the shop, is just really, really good at it. If we want to talk about like junior resource companies, I think, like I said, we've covered some of the ones in Zambia. I think they do really well. Rome Resources, I've talked about a lot. That tin and copper player, I think, is really, really, really good. But yeah, I think I'll tell you what it is that when we're looking at sort of like moonshot stocks that are going to do really, 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 really well, I'm just waiting for something to come up at the moment. You know, I haven't got anything yet where I can go.
You know, for me, a moonshot for 2025 and beyond, there's actually, I've got two, and both of them Zurich's plays. Okay. The first one, in my view, is Conroy Gold. If it gets a joint venture, it is going to go ballistic, right? Isn't it? Yeah. I don't doubt that there is a huge amount of gold there. I don't doubt it. But it needs money spent in the ground. And if that money is spent in the ground, then all good. I can't see that this will not go crazy.
Okay? Yeah, I spoke to Marion, the ex-Barrican lady, you know, at pretty serious length at Mines and Money.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, I don't know, it's quite a while ago now, actually, wasn't it? But she was we were talking about it, and I was like, she was explaining, these are assets that have been explored like a junior would explore them, right? This is the crux of it. And the past 20 years or so, it's been approached like a junior, and it's now finally being approached like a major would. And you're right, it needs capital injected into the ground. But this is how you're going to find the grade, the length, the, you know, a way to get gold out of the ground. Marion, it gave me a lot more confidence in the company than I had, you know, before speaking to her, because she knows what she's doing. And she wouldn't have come into the company, you know, for any reason other than to, you know, find a district scale discovery in Ireland.
Yeah. And I think it's that.
You always have, haven't you?
Yeah, no, for the last 3 years or whatever.
Been a moonshot for the last 20 years, though, hasn't it, Conroy? Has it been your moonshot for 20 years, Kev?
When it shoots along the IPO price, there'll be some guy in his like 90s. I told you it was worth it in the end.
We will see. My view is, I think in 2025, I predict they will have a JV, and one of the majors will come in and go, here you go, guys, here's 25%, 30% of the project. You got a free carry. Now bugger off. Let us do everything we need to do. You can help, and we'll see. And we will see a historic rise.
But as hold that it has more of an impact than or an effect than Damir did. And I know Damir are nowhere near as big as some of the other names. But let's face it, there was not a really massive uplift on any of the announcement.
So Damir spent all that money. And if you spoke to Marion, as we did, she basically said they weren't very clever about what they did and how they spent that money. Okay. So now that isn't undermining them. That is really, they were not gold discoveries, and they didn't come in as a major to try and say, how can we get this district sorted out and pushed forward? You know, I mean, and there's the second one is Genflow. Okay. Who doesn't want to live longer? Okay, the longevity, they keep getting grants, they keep not needing that much finance, and they're moving into the longevity with pets first so that they can start to see how this will work in humans. We've interviewed them a few times in the past, like a year or two ago, but I think Genflow in 2025 is going to be a year where it will change. And if they do come up that actually proves that this extends our lives, then this is going to go bananas. Okay. And then my third one, which you can also argue about, is actually more resource-based again in Rwanda and in Morocco, Eterion. I think it could go crazy if they come back that Rio has found district-scale lithium. And that we visited in Rwanda, I really do think could go crazy. Hardly any buying on this stock. It just has floated down. It's now 50p. But if those results come, and they're going to come in the first few months of 2025, and they are good and prove a district scale lithium, along with probably JV of some pretty sizable copper assets that they've got in Morocco, I think you could see could do incredibly well in 2025. Any other stocks anyone wants to mention?
Yeah, well, you just mentioned Morocco, so I'm going to throw one out here as Emerson, right? So they have effectively a dispute with the Kingdom of Morocco, and there's a specialist arbitration legal team that's going after Morocco to get some money out of the country. And this group of investors which backed them were the same ones that backed the GreenX arbitration victory over the Polish government.
Okay.
And I just look at that and I go, this is one that could be a good moonshot if you like a little bit of risk reward. But I can't guarantee it, but I have a few shares that could be quite fun.
Yeah, I like that asset. That's the Chemiset asset, the asset, isn't it, there?
Yeah.
Very good. But again, they've been fraught with, I'm not saying it's a horizontal story, but they were really beaten hard, weren't they, Emerson, on that news?
Oh, yeah. No, this, for me, this is a play on a decent legal team. It's a simple fact.
It's not really anything to do with the asset anymore.
No. It's if you look into the team that's taking that legal case, and the finance that's backing them, and how many places they won elsewhere in the world. It looks promising. And also it's I wouldn't say easy money because it's never easy money, but for me, an easy kind of decision to jump in. But I will say, take your profit when you make it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is with those ones, like we saw Zenith Energy, I don't know if you saw that, but they announced that a key decision, and I think it was like a $503 million arbitration case against the Republic of Tunisia. And they basically, that their legal team managed to get the tribunal, has fully rejected the Tunisia's attempt to delay the proceedings, which will allow the case. And they did like 200% on that news. So there can be some pretty wild swings on these legal, legal wins.
Yeah, I think they can.
The last one I'll come on to, for me anyway, was and partly because one of the stocks I chose in 2024, 2025 was Power Metals, was First Class Metals. First Class Metals, here we go. They've raised considerable amount of money at the end of 2024, all through this 79th group, which now seems to be going to take a major stake, as in 51% of First Class Metals. What's your thoughts? I mean, my thoughts is, yes, it's a lot of dilution, but the scenario with the assets that they have, they can't really be progressed unless they spend the money. Raising the money just on the market probably could have cost at least that and maybe more. So is it a better situation to have given away that much of the company, but now be secure, or should they have carried on down the route? What's your thoughts?
There's no point diluting just to raise working capital, right? Which is what their alternative was. So this is the best thing they could have done. Are IPO investors going to be happy with it? No. Have they, people who've been in from the start, may generate a profit? No. I'm kind of frustrated with it because it seems like the assets that they have and the work they're doing should be reflected better in the market cap, and it just isn't. But the North Hemlo property and the Zigzag property, the lithium property, that these are both really, really good assets. And you get some exploration in there, and you could find something really, really good. And you're in the right part of the world. And I think they did the best they could with what they had. I think that's the reality. If you were in their shoes with this market, you would have done the same, I think. But in the same part of the world, obviously, you've got Panther Metal, which has assets which are gonna, some of them are very even adjacent, and I know Darren's doing a lot of drilling there, so we're gonna get some interesting assays back. And then Fulcrum Metals, with the technology with Extract, I think Nate, do you know what, actually I think I might make Fulcrum one of my moonshots for the next few years, because that technology, I mean, I've looked into it in like real serious depth with Extract, is just an Extract is partnered with Bechtel. It could be game changing for the gold, or even just the mining materials industry in general.
And I really like that, as you say. Like I think you caught up with Ryan and Aiden, and we certainly had a chat with
so many people.
They're very interesting. Like that Tech Hughes and Silver Knight, like they put out a tailings update, didn't they? where they announced, I think it was like an increase in gold recoveries of up to 63%, you know,
yeah,
plus the reduction in the leach times of up to 94%.
So, do you know, so there's $10 billion of your gold in tailings, you know, in Canada, and most of it is like a community problem they want dealt with. And what this tech does, it gets the gold out for tailings, but also renders these toxic tailings inert and no longer an environmental hazard. So it's two birds, one stone, and you can buy these tailings piles for next to nothing because they're valueless or even a liability to whoever has to deal with them. So yeah, I think it's one of the ones which could generate massive capital. The only thing I will say is because you've got Bechtel and Extract involved, that everything has to be done at their pace,
yeah,
and therefore it takes time.
Time.
Yeah, so I'd say it's more of a moonshot for 2026, but given the share price is so low now, it's a good place to buy in and just hang on and wait.
That's an interesting one, really, isn't it? Because when we talk about a lot of these companies, you talked about Jubilee and you picked Jubilee for 2025, they are basically taking the resource out of the crap that's left.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and in essence, you don't have to mine if the crap's already on the surface. So you just got to put the processes in place to extract that.
I think as you talked about those recovery rates and the company that I alluded to on the pick for 25 was, and it probably is a bit of a moonshot in the sense that the market cap is you know 3 million now, circa 3 million, but it's a very low market cap, and that is Cobra Resources, and I've talked about them in the past and the fact that they've done this very differently than your traditional exploration companies, and what they've done is they've prioritized the metallurgy first rather than proving the deposit up, you know. So basically they've proven that the Boland, that they've got this high recoverability and economic potential ahead of this traditional resource drilling. They've done the bench scale testing, which has demonstrated these like exceptional recoveries of the ionic rare earth elements. It's like 68% for the magna REEs and 62% for the heavy REEs. And again, using very low acid consumption and mineral impurities, the time it takes with the ISR has been, you know, reduced from something like 30 days down to effectively 24 hours or under 24 hours. And it's just this new in-situ recovery mining technique in these clays is just exciting, I think. And I think that, you know, if they can get the offtakes in place, they can prove up the resources now at Boland with this. They've got the fully funded 12,000 meter drilling program there to define the scale and grade. Then I think they can deliver, a maiden resource and scoping study for 2025. So that's the one that I'll be excited about in 25.
Good. What do we think is going to happen to this beautiful greenback US dollar then? Just to go before we finish, let's talk about the US dollar. Let's talk about copper. Let's talk about gold. Let's talk about resources, tungsten, yellow. What do we think is going to happen? I mean, I've been predicting the demise of the dollar now for 3 years.
Well,
and it keeps getting stronger.
So don't listen to me. The problem is, right, it's just the government debt, with debt ceiling, the deficit. I mean, it's all completely unsustainable in every way imaginable. So it can only end one way, which is either going to be massive spending cuts in the US or just continued devaluation of the dollar. And I imagine we're going to get devaluation of the dollar because that's the easy way out. I mean, look at what it's lost 99% of its value over the past 100 years anyway. It'll just keep going down. And it's the same when you look at like real estate has gone up or gold has gone up or stocks have gone up. No, that's not what's happened. The dollar has become less valuable. In many of those cases, a lot of the gains are actually just the fiat currency is worthless. That's the reality.
But does it mean though, I mean, and this is one of the things that Rick Rule said, which really hit me was, is actually the dollar the best of the worst, because actually all the other fiat currencies are trash.
They're all trash. Well, yeah. This is the thing, right? Like, nobody with any money wants to keep cash in the bank because it loses its value every year. You know,
yeah.
Your interest rate is almost always lower than your inflation rate in just a savings account. So yeah, I think we'll probably see. But then the problem is the dollar is just, it's the global store of value. So it'll probably just retain its strength. But you'll see gold, I think, will just keep going higher and higher until they get a grip of the dollar problem. And yeah, I think that's how you're going to measure it. If gold keeps going higher and higher in dollar terms, but the dollar keeps being stronger and stronger against everybody else, then
I'm not really sure what that means for the global economy, but it does mean you should buy some sovereigns and just put them on the mattress.
That's exactly. No, what it does mean is that, you know, could we see that the dollar really does devalue against all the other currencies, and then we get an exponential increase in the value of gold because it's seen as a store of value. I mean, I don't think we're a million miles away from that. I really don't.
Depends on how much printing Trump, to, you know, get the Fed does, basically. And we've obviously got him taking office on the 20th of this month. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what the first few things, you know, that he pushes through. Obviously, we've got a lot of talk. We're going to see what happens with the geopolitics and, you know, the macroeconomics for surrounding the wars that we, you know, that are various wars. You know, he said he could end Ukraine in 24 hours. Obviously, that, you know, a lot of that remains to be seen. I think it's a very bold statement, but it'll certainly be interesting. I think we need to see a lot more peace going forward in not only the Middle East, but, you know, how is he going to handle problems like Iran? How is he going to handle problems like Netanyahu in Israel? Is he going to be able to use his contacts in the Kremlin to be able to talk Putin round to some sort of, you know, agreement or land agreement, peace deal? It all remains to be seen this month, that's for sure.
Let's hope we can have peace on Earth, and then Trump will invade Greenland, and everything will be it. Honky-dory.
Fantastic. Well, on that note,
I don't know. I'm not too worried about it, to be honest. I think, you know, the problem is that we kind of live in this world where we say, oh, you know, geopolitics is awful and there's little, and you know, the world is actually more peaceful than it was in the past. People don't like, you know, World War II was 18 years ago, World War I, you know, 100 years ago now. It's you know, in terms of the amount of actual war going on, there's quite a lot of peace by historical standards. And yeah, I mean, I'm kind of mildly hopeful because, boy, I think Trump is an odious person, you know, on an individual level. His presidency was actually relatively, well, compared to other presidents, very peaceful. So maybe he will be able to work his magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
But part of that is because he's so unpredictable, you know?
Yeah, he talks, he tends to talk in superlatives and also very aggressively, but I think when it comes down to face-to-face negotiations, I don't think he's like that, to be honest.
No, I think all we can do is wait and see. But I just, my hope is that we have a more peaceful 2025 and we don't have escalation. And a lot of that, I mean, for example, there will be peace between Russia and Ukraine, whether that's next year or the year after, or the year after, it will happen. And what happens to the global economy when it does and all the sanctions get lifted off Russia and then everyone's going to spend loads of money rebuilding Ukraine? You're probably going to see a massive global boom, you know? So something to look forward to.
Can you imagine the billions it's going to cost to actually, or trillions, I should say, it's going to cost to actually rebuild Gaza and rebuild parts of Lebanon and
all, you know, Israel, they're just going to swallow the mark and build it themselves. So, you know, they're just going to annex all of that territory.
Yeah, they are. I agree with you, but who's going to pay for that? US is going to pay for that.
Yeah. And then they'll Israel will pay for it, because Israel will just be the lapdog of the US and the Middle East. That's the way it will be, which is very sad for many reasons, but you know, this is global geopolitics. It's not going to change.
Okay, and for all those people in the UK that have a mortgage, what's people's view on interest rates in the UK during 2025? What are we sitting at the minute? Well, 5%?
No, they've held them, haven't they?
They're at 4.75, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, all of the economists are talking sort of 3-4 rate cuts. You know, I mean, a lot of banks are saying sort of under 4% by the end of the year. In terms of mortgages, you've got to be aware that swap rates are already pricing that in. So you're looking at five-year rates of around 4% now anyway. But I think that, trying to think of the words, you have a very inflationary budget by Labour and possibly more tax rises in the new year when they realise they need more money. And so you might find that the rate cuts that are being predicted just don't happen again. Same, you know, they were talking 5 or 6 rate cuts this year, most of the year, only got 2. You might get 1 or 2 next year, but it wouldn't surprise me to see rates stay above 4% for the foreseeable future. And to be honest, it's a good thing. I find it quite frustrating when people in general go, oh, it's a nightmare. It's like, no, 4-5% interest rates are great for the economy. They're great for growth. because they create a situation where if you keep your money in a bank account, you're getting a reasonable return, but you're still incentivized to invest, but investing gives you a better return than the bank account, but not in stupid shit. And this has been the problem, the major problem since 2008, is that people were throwing loads and loads of money into completely pointless stuff because it's definitely keeping it in the account where it's going to make nothing. But yeah, I think we'll get a couple of interest rate cuts next year, and then we'll see. I hope so anyway, unless there's a big global shock, which, again, is the same problem. We had Brexit, we had Ukraine, we had Silicon Valley Bank, we had Credit Suisse. We've had the pandemic, obviously. It's been so many black swan events over the past few years that, you know, we don't know if the next one's going to be around the corner or not either. That's the other issue to think about.
So what's the black swan event of 2025?
Taiwan, potentially, is the real big danger, obviously. If China's economy continues to tank and they decide that this is the only way that they're going to get the population to unite behind them, then that's the real risk. And obviously, Taiwan generates the vast, vast majority of all the semiconductors in the world. That's the real, real danger to the global economies.
So then we'll all be back to trading coins, silver and gold coins.
Well, I don't know. I would trade mine. They're staying under the mattress. I think it's more, I mean, other black swan potential events. I mean, what could there be? You know, like for example, a really significant artificial intelligence advance that renders, you know, major weapons useless. For example, that's possible. There's so many things that could happen in 2025. We don't know. What do you reckon? What could be the black swan event? Any ideas?
Don't know.
It's not a black swan, if you know. So, you
well,
know.
Exactly. I suppose it becomes a white swan then, doesn't it?
White swan, roughly.
I'm hoping, genuinely hoping that peace breaks out in those parts of the world. And I'm genuinely hoping we don't get another pandemic-type scenario to keep us all quiet and shut us up, basically.
I don't think that'll happen again. Not unless it's something seriously, contagious, like Ebola or something like that, or something along those lines. But yeah. But do you not think? I think there was so much that was learned from that you have to learn from that, don't you? The lockdowns were, not the right move. Again, that's debate for a completely another podcast. But I just think there was so much learned from that and so many mistakes made. And it's easy to say them in hindsight, but ultimately, I just cannot see the country going into that state of lockdown again or multiple lockdowns.
You need like Spanish influenza or Black Death, something serious. I've been saying this to you guys for a long time. The big problem with the lockdown response to the pandemic is that when the next pandemic comes and it's way more deadly and far more serious, people won't listen to the rules. But yeah, hopefully we don't have a pandemic next year, and hopefully China doesn't invade Taiwan. Hopefully there's an outbreak of peace. The US figures out a way to deal with its debt problem. And all the stocks go up 400% and we all laugh our way for the bank.
Good.
Well, we don't go to the bank. We use the banks.
Don't interest.
I say, well, on that bombshell, we'll say thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, hit the bell icon for any further notifications of future episodes, and have a prosperous new year, everyone.
Yeah, and if you don't like what you heard, have a good moan about it. Enjoy in 2025.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.